Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. Hungary's Prime Minister, Viktor Orban, has been vilified this month from both inside and outside the borders. The European Union has launched legal proceedings against Hungary, saying changes in the constitution threaten the independence of the judiciary and the central bank. An EU advisory panel on Wednesday said changes to Hungary's media law has allowed the government to undermine freedom of the press. Tens of thousands of Hungarians took to the streets to protest against the government. But state media pretended the demonstration never happened. To talk about these radical changes in the former Soviet satellite and discuss the political and economic consequences are journalists Charles Recknagel and Attila Mong. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hello. Thank
Hi.
You.
Hey, Charles is a correspondent for Radio Free Europe based in Prague, a former colleague, and Attila is the editor of Origo, an online news site based in Budapest. About a year ago, the government banned Attila from public broadcasting because he held a one-minute silence on live radio to protest Hungary's new media law. But before Attila gives us a close look at what's happening inside Hungary, let's get a wider perspective. Charles, the headline in your recent report on Hungary has this provocative question in the headline. Is Hungary backtracking on democracy? So how has Prime Minister Orban's party been able to, I guess, first of all, what is the EU and IMF saying about Hungary, and why are they upset with what's been happening?
Well, the EU has had its eye on Budapest now for well over a year because of what Prime Minister Viktor Orban is doing in Budapest in creating amendments to the constitution and passing new laws around that. All of which come into effect with the start of this year. But it might be helpful just to review a little bit what has been happening over the more than a year now of quarreling between the EU and Viktor Orban. It really started in December of 2010.
Yeah, he'd only been in office for about 6 months by then, right?
That's right. Shortly after he came into office, he pushed through because his party, his ruling coalition, enjoys a two-thirds majority in the parliament. He pushed through changes to the media legislation in Hungary, which essentially collected all public broadcasting under the authority of a new national media and communications authority, which is dominated by people loyal to his own ruling party. And at the same time, this authority has power to levy heavy fines on private media that violate the regulations that it promulgates. And among the regulations it's put forward are some very vaguely worded statements, such as that fines will be levied for unbalanced news coverage or for unspecified attacks on human dignity. These things run counter to the EU's perception of a free press, and immediately after these changes were announced, the EU began reacting quite strongly to it. For example, the Luxembourg foreign minister said that the plans clearly violate the spirit and the letter of EU treaties, and raised the question of whether Hungary is worthy of leading the EU. Now, that last part, worthy of leading the EU, was particularly pertinent because Hungary then went on in January of 2011 to chair the EU for 6 months.
Right. And then you want to get into the constitutional changes as well?
Right. There were other changes, too, that then went on through the course of last year. And they were to the judicial and economic sectors. They were no more, no less sweeping than the media law changes. The government gave itself power to install one of the central bank's three deputy governors and to have a government minister participate in key meetings of the central bank. This was very alarming to the EU as well as to the World Bank and IMF, because the EU sees central bank independence as sacrosanct in the EU treaty, and groups like the World Bank and IMF see independence of the central bank as absolutely key to a country's financial stability. And then regarding the judiciary, the government put forward legislation requiring judges to retire, not at 70 as they had before, but at 62. And worse, from the EU's point of view, the power to appoint a new judge passed to a single judge, who happens to be the wife of a member of the ruling party who is a parliamentarian at the European Parliament in Brussels. So that suggested to many in the EU that there was going to be gross political interference in appointing of new judges. These are things that are strongly felt in Brussels, and the reaction, as I've said, has been very critical.
Right, and I know that the Prime Minister visited Brussels this week and seemed to soften his stance. How did he change his position this week?
Well, it is interesting because, by contrast, I should say that when these things first surfaced, the quarrel first began between the EU and Viktor Orban, Mr. Orban was rejecting the criticism in no uncertain terms. He said, "Criticism from afar or from Western Europe doesn't frighten us." It's a little bit different this time, a little bit more than a year later, a lot more arguing back and forth. This time, when Mr. Orban went to Brussels, he appeared in front of the European Parliament, and he said that all the issues raised by the European Union can be swiftly resolved and remedied. But at the same time, he showed that he's not ready to back down completely. He said, "Our general approach is that we are open and flexible. We are ready to negotiate all the points. But what we need is not political opinion, but arguments," which suggests that he's far from ready to flee the field of far from ready to flee the field of combat.
Right. And Attila, why do you think that the Prime Minister softened his stance?
Well, to understand the context, we have to know that the new Prime Minister introduced at the beginning of his prime ministership, a new kind of economic policy with very controversial economic measures like heavy taxation of multinational banks and some of the most important foreign companies. And this kind of economic policy for the moment proves not to be successful. The Hungarian economy is not growing sufficiently enough to make a balance in the state budget. So Hungary, in fact, is in a situation that it turns back to the IMF and the European Union for a kind of financial assistance. So the leverage of the European Union and the IMF and thus the international institutions is exactly this, that the government of Viktor Orban is in need of financial assistance to support his economic policies and to convince the international investors who buy Hungarian state bonds that it's worth to buy. And this is the main leverage in the hands of the European Union and the International Monetary Fund.
And what kind of reactions were there? I know that the state media is does self-censuring, but what kind of a reaction in Budapest was there to what he did this week?
Reaction is mixed, because at the same time we have to know that Viktor Orban has a very strong legitimacy. He won a landslide victory in 2010 after a period of 8 years of catastrophic economic governance of the part of the current opposition, so a socialist liberal government. So in fact, the politicians who are harshly criticizing Viktor Orban's policies in the opposition, some of them were in the government during 8 years, which proved to be catastrophic for the Hungarian economy. Viktor Orban inherited a very difficult economic situation. So that's why reactions are mixed, because Viktor Orban is losing legitimacy and losing popularity, especially because of some of his decisions and some of the quarrels and disputes with the European Union, which are popular in some parts of the society but highly unpopular in other parts of the society. So what we can see now is a very strong opposition in certain groups of the society, which are turning against the government policies, and the groups among which the popularity of the prime minister is diminishing very quickly. But at the same time, Fidesz, the party of the prime minister, is still the most popular party. So it's still on top of the opinion polls. So it's important to understand the situation that Viktor Orban is enjoying quite an important support from a lot of people in the society. And just last week there was a huge demonstration with approximately 100,000 people in the streets of Budapest in support of the Prime Minister's policies. It was partly, in fact, in a response to another demonstration with approximately 100,000 people at the beginning of this year, beginning of January.
How are those two protests covered by both the state media and the independent media? And how did your news outlet cover those two protests? How would you compare and contrast the coverage?
It's a very good question, and very symbolic in a way, because when this very controversial new media law was adopted in December 2010, and I was protesting against media law because I was thinking, with a lot of other people and a lot of NGOs, that the media law is threatening free press. One of the main worries and concerns was about public media, that this media law will turn public media in a very simple propaganda outlet. And when we watch the coverage of these different demonstrations, we can see just two examples. When the opposition protest happened at the beginning of January, and this made, of course, headlines in independent media, how the public media covered this event, the reporter of the first channel, the first public channel of the Hungarian state television, went to the protest and showed the other side of the street, where there were no people, in fact, just some police behind the cameraman. So right. In front of the reporter, there were like tens of thousands of people protesting, but the state media showed basically an empty street. In contrast to that, when the pro-government protest happened during last weekend, the Hungarian state TV, in fact, changed its programming of Saturday evening after, during the Woody Allen movie, Vicky Cristina Barcelona, there were constant messages for viewers that there will be a special program after the film discussing the successful demonstration. So they made a special program Saturday night, basically prime time, to discuss the exceptional success of the pro-government protest. So this is just to show you how the state media reported on the event. Of course, independent media is reporting, our media outlet is reporting, of course, in a balanced and very good quality journalism. But a lot of people get their primary source of information from public TV broadcasts, public radio broadcasts, and also some commercial TVs, which are highly unpolitical. They are covering news from a tabloid point of view, celebrity news and crime and interesting little stories, and much less politics. So
okay,
people who don't get their information from social media and from independent private media, they can be easily misled
right.
by the reporting of the mainstream state.
Right. Now, I need to just interrupt just for a minute. I want to get back into the social media aspect. But first, before we continue, I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You can also find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to today's program on our website. Please send us questions or comments via globaljournalist@kbia.org or our Facebook page. Now, so you're saying that social media, Twitter, Facebook, and the online news outlets don't have a lot of popularity right now? Do you see that as a potential growth and having something similar influence as to what happened during Arab Spring?
I mean, maybe I was not putting the words correctly. Social media is highly popular. The penetration of Facebook mainly is very high, even among European countries. A lot of people get their information from different social media pages. So the popularity and the importance is growing. It helps really for people who oppose government policies to organize themselves. In fact, one of the most popular and biggest Facebook groups in public policy domain was created just after the media law was adopted. Very quickly, Facebook group for 1 million people for press freedom in Hungary was created. And of course, there are not 1 million people, but quite an important number, like around 100,000 people who are members of this Facebook group. And this Facebook group organized several important protests during 2011 and also, the protest of this beginning of this year in January was partly organized by this Facebook group. So this kind of tools, of course, are important, and they are getting more and more important in this sense.
And Charles, I want to put this in a bit of perspective. And how would you place Hungary on this continuum of vibrant democracies and democracies just in name in the former Soviet countries? Is it now closer to the Central Asian models, or is it still closer to the more reformed countries like the Czech Republic?
Well, this is a thing which, like beauty, is in the eye of the beholder. And in various op-eds that have been written in European newspapers, Viktor Orban is always being compared to various people, usually unfavorably. He's sometimes compared to Alexander Lukashenko in Belarus, with the idea that now there are two dictators in Europe, not just in Minsk in Belarus, but also in Budapest. That's probably extreme. It's more a measure of the heated feelings and rhetoric about Viktor Orban maybe than it is about reality. But there's no question at all that Hungary at this point is widely seen in Europe as backtracking on democracy in a region, Eastern Europe, which up until now has had its ups and downs, but generally has integrated very well into the European tradition of democracy. But let's say in many of these countries there already was a long tradition of democratic institutions, of parliaments, of power sharing. The one thing that's certain is that Mr. Orban appears to have a concept of government which is centralized in terms of political power, of centralizing political power. That's a tendency that always is ready to rebound in Eastern Europe, but which in the other countries has been pretty well suppressed by strong institutions which now have grown up over the years since 1989, when communism collapsed throughout this region.
Right. And of course, Hungary doesn't have a lot of experience with a democratic form of government and a free press. It was a kingdom for 1,000 years and then was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire and a fascist state after World War I and a communist state after World War II. And then in the 80s, things started to change. And Tilly, when you were a kid, I understand that you and your parents listened to Radio Free Europe in the years before the revolution.
Yes, of course, a lot of people were getting information from Radio Free Europe and also the BBC World Service, the Hungarian program of the BBC World Service. And it's kind of strange, really, yes, that 20 years later we have to discuss about Hungary backtracking from democracy, which is, of course, an exaggeration, because especially the events of last year show how much Hungarian society is reacting very strongly to any attempt which they suppose would threaten their basic democratic rights. So the events of last year proved to me that, of course, this is not Belarus, and this is not a country backtracking from democracy. It's a country where there is a very strong government with a two-thirds majority in parliament, which is kind of exceptional in a modern European democracy. And this government tries to use its power at its maximum. And in this sense, this kind of, I would not use the word abuse of power, but it's very close to this term, that the government is trying to make use of the maximum of its power, can threaten minority views in a democracy. Because democracy is about minorities, it's about checks and balances. And when you have a very strong central government, which is trying to take out or lessen the importance of these checks and balances, this can be dangerous. This is what we have been experiencing, I think, and this is what we have to speak up against. But I don't think that using terms like Hungary going in the category of Belarus, or sometimes we hear qualifications in Western press that Hungary is turning to a fascist system or something like that. This makes this kind of it's more difficult to argue for us if we have such kind of exaggerations. But it's nothing to do with this.
Right. Well, it seems to me that it's kind of interesting that with the Orbán's control of the media somewhat and his strength in the political system, it seems like it's really the financial troubles that are causing the government to backtrack a bit and to be able to keep in the good graces of the European Union and the IMF. So in a sense, it's the economic conditions are forcing it to remain more democratic. Is that somewhat correct?
Yes, the argument we can hear from the government. And of course, it's partly true, because Hungary is in a very deep economic crisis. And of course, the government, if it wants to get the country out of the troubles, the government has to act very strongly and quickly and actively. But if this kind of economic troubles serve as an argument to eliminate some checks and balances from the democracy, is, I think, very dangerous. So you cannot support this kind of ideas with any kind of exceptional economic situation.
Right. And the former U.S. ambassador to Hungary, Mark Palmer, said it's conceivable that the European Union will vote to expel Hungary, and even, or at least bring up a vote if it doesn't change. And he also suggested that Radio Free Europe should start broadcasting again in Hungary. Charles, what do you think about this dynamic about the what's forcing Orbán to change his position?
Well, what's interesting, you mentioned the EU thinking about, as Mr. Palmer says, thinking about its options for expelling Hungary. I'm not sure it's quite gotten to that point yet, and there are reasons why it may never reach that point. But what happened last week was the European Commission essentially gave Mr. Orbán a deadline to take legal to either change the laws or to see the EU take legal action against Hungary, to change the laws that don't comply with EU legislation. And the EU gave Hungary a one-month deadline to do this, to change or face legal action. And if Hungary fails, what would happen is that there could be a move to bring Hungary before the European Court of Justice. And potentially, or conceivably, that could lead to having Hungary's EU voting rights suspended. But it's important to point out that no member state ever yet in the history of the European Union has faced a procedure to have its voting rights stripped. And that procedure actually would require the unanimous agreement of the EU states' governments. And that would be very, very difficult to obtain.
Right.
But still, these are still measures of how heated this dispute has become. And as we've pointed out, the real leverage here that the EU has in this issue is the financial leverage, because, as we said, Hungary's finances are in real trouble. And at this point, the World Bank has cut off negotiations about further loans to Hungary until some of these questions are straightened out.
Charles, we just have about 15 seconds left, so I'm going to have to wrap this up. Our director is Travis McMillan. Pat Akers engineered the audio. Raymond Tungerkar is our executive producer. And I want to thank Charles and Attila for joining us on the program. Please stay tuned for Free Press Watch. I'm David Reed for Global Journalist.
And now, Free Press Watch, a segment on Global Journalist where each week we bring you a rundown of major events affecting press freedom around the world. I'm Lainey Mullen. Today's news comes from the BBC, Bloomberg, the Committee to Protect Journalists, the New York Times, and Reuters. Last week, demonstrators in Turkey protested the conclusion of a trial involving the 2007 murder of ethnic Armenian journalist Hrant Dink. Three men were convicted and imprisoned, but none were convicted of being members of criminal organization. At least 20,000 people marched in Istanbul calling for investigations into the government involvement. Many displayed signs that read, "We are all Hrant. We are all Armenian." In China, microblog users will soon have to reveal their identities to site administrators in order to use the sites. Authorities in five cities have asked new microblog users to register with their real names. Existing users will soon have to give their real names, too. In Kazakhstan, authorities detained the editor of an independent Almaty-based weekly, Vzglyad. The weekly's offices in Igor Vinyavsky's apartment were raided by the Kazakh security services, and he was detained as part of a crackdown on critical media and opposition activists in Kazakhstan. For more information on these and other events affecting press freedom around the world, please visit our website at globaljournalist.org. Thank you for joining us this week on Global Journalist. I'm Lainey Mullen.